things first, I'm Sarah Kustak, filling in for Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That's Nick Wright.
Guys, great to see you. Thank you, Sarah. Good
week. Hey, I appreciate it.
Good to see you. Great football weekend.
Got some basketball.
Great job on the call this weekend.
So. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome.
Glad to be back at home. Well, I was back in Ohio, but now I'm back.
Second home.
Glad to have you back.
All right, let's get it.
I know, because we have got a big show today. The Patriots lost in a thriller.
Somebody.
The Steelers are losing to everybody. But we start with the Eagles and the Cowboys. Dak Prescott was trying to make it 5 wins in a row for Dallas. And then the fourth quarter, the game tied at 16. He finds a streaking Amari Cooper for the touchdown. And the fourth quarter was where it got good. The Eagles would respond. Carson Wentz hits Nelson Aguilar on the deep pass here. Pretty little play for the Eagles. Then Darren Sproles would even up the score with less than 2 minutes to go. So we'd head to overtime. Less than 4 minutes left. Fourth and one. Zeke barely picks up the fourth down. 3 plays later, ball deflected. Cooper grabs it, takes it into the end zone for the game winner. Cowboys win their 5th in a row. Dak with over 450 yards passing. And Cooper with over 200 yards receiving. Here he is after the game.
I mean, I've been running a lot of slant routes since I got here. I beat these guys on a lot of slant routes when we first played them. That guy knew I was running the slant. So I just stayed with the ball. And thank God.
Thankful for this team we have, this team, this coaching staff, and be able to just to continue to fight. And when things were up, things were down, a team that never wavered, that never blinked, that never doubted us coming out on top. I'm thankful for that, honestly.
3, 2. All right, Nick, how impressive was the Cowboys' win?
Listen, it clinches the division all but officially. They would have to go 0-3, and the Eagles would have to go 3-0. So they're going to win the division. And they did it in the context of I thought they were going to win the game when the fourth quarter started. I thought they were going to win the game the way they won the Saints game, except instead of being 13-10, I thought it was going to be 12-9, mm-hmm. where the defense is great and the offense is mediocre to bad, and they overcome it. Going into the fourth quarter, Dak was having his worst game of the season. He had 3 turnovers. They couldn't get anything going. 3 of their points were on a 62-yard field goal at the end of the first half. And then Dak and the offense flipped from the worst game they had played all year to what I consider their best passing game since the playoff loss to Green Bay, when Dak and that offense went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers and just ran out of time at the end. It wasn't shocking Dallas won. It was shocking to me the way they won. And I have to give you credit in this regard, and I'm careful to give you credit because sometimes when I compliment you on football, you're like, oh, surprised I know some football. But so,
yeah,
go ahead.
He's going on the Robert Smith thing that I told him. I scored a touchdown one time and just made an unbelievable catch. Came to the huddle. Robert Smith's like, that was an unbelievable catch. And I got a little hasty with him. Was like, that's what I'm supposed to do.
So. See, he's not always the easiest guy to compliment is my point. But there is very few things the sports media is unanimous on. And there was one thing that this football season, everyone aside from Chris Carter has been unanimous on. The Cowboys overpaid for Amari Cooper. What were they thinking trading a first-round pick for Amari Cooper? And acquiring Amari Cooper seems to have turned their season around. And he looks like a guy who absolutely is worth a first-round pick in this league. And that he was the difference along with Dak in the fourth quarter when their defense all of a sudden got a little shaky and the Cowboys got their biggest and most important win of the year.
Yeah, it's not a matter of trying to give me credit. It's just I have a great deal of faith in Amari Cooper. And forget the football player, but just who the kid is, his goals that he wants in life from a very, very young age. He's very, very reserved. He's not a diva wide receiver. He left Miami and all those schools in Florida where he was raised to go to Alabama to play football because he knew it was going to be the hardest but the best for him. Alabama didn't have a bunch of quarterbacks and everything, but his mentality was, I want to be the best I can be. This is best for me. And Amari's one of those kind of kids. He always wants to make his parents or his coaches happy. And when he was in Oakland and he was struggling with catching the football, man, it played a huge part in his psyche. It played a huge part, took away his confidence. And now you can see because Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett, they called Nick Saban. That was the number one thing they did in that they called Nick Saban to find out what does this kid need. And since he's been to Dallas, They have been doing the types of things and getting him the football, but he's a big-time player. Like, absent of, you know, maybe a half season in Oakland, I mean, but a lot of players have gone to Oakland and their careers have gone a different way. Oakland's not the place where it used to be, where an old veteran could go there or something and resurrect his career. It's different now. So Amari's like a lot of people. He just needs confidence and he needs someone to believe in him. And you have to be able to coach him a certain, not coddle him, but also, he wants to be coached hard. But it's important for him that people believe in him. And that's what Dallas get. And that's the results that we're seeing from his play on the field. Very, very happy for him. You got a good friend, right, Colin Cowherd?
Yes.
What does he say about the wide receivers?
What? Well, he said he's coming around.
Tell me what he said about the wide receivers.
That they're not the cake. They're just the icing on the cake.
Okay. Well, how's the cake in Dallas?
He said Nick or to you?
He said it to C, and now he says he's coming around. But go ahead.
Yeah, no one wants cake without ice. All right? Look
the
at the Dallas
is the
Cowboys.
Best part of the cake.
Thank you.
Don't let anyone tell you.
So
different.
Colin Cowherd, eat that one. It's great to see because you can play football without wide receivers, but let's try to score some points. Let's try to run the ball up and down the field on people, and you'll watch how many times and how many mistakes that you that they'll make. So very, very happy for the Cowboys. They pulled the trigger on it, and it's really, really, it's precious to see someone who you know went through something, and now you see him come out on the other side, and this is who he is as a player. This is not some type of hot streak or something. He's a Pro Bowl player. He should be a perennial Pro Bowler, and I would challenge people. You give me three receivers in the NFL that run better routes than Amari Cooper.
And you know what's funny? Maybe the worst route he ran all night was the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah,
right?
great pickup
this
there.
Is,
yes.
I saw it in real time, and I thought I knew it, but then you came in this morning and you confirmed it. He's not supposed to let the defensive back get on his inside shoulder there. He does, and they got fortunate there. But you know what? That's what happens. Sometimes, you know, fortune favors the bold is what they say sometimes. Jason Garrett went for it on 4th-and-1 in overtime instead of kicking the field goal and relying on the defense. Like, all of a sudden you're taking shots downfield. This could have been a pick six the other way, mm-hmm. and then we're killing Dak because of his fourth turnover. They got lucky there, and Amari made a big play.
Sarah, I think that you'll enjoy the preparation. He knew as an athlete, I've been doing this to a guy. It's like basketball. I've been doing a guy, I've been crossing him over. He's going to be ready for that, but I'm still going to go to my move because he stuck with the game plan. If Amari goes behind that defensive back, he picks it off and goes to the house. The guy's inside got great leverage, does everything that he's taught to be able to do, just does not finish the play. Mm-hmm. Cowboys are very, very fortunate. I'm glad Amari witnessed, though, the reason why that guy was inside, because he's been beating him. I'm glad he made body contact. That's what was able to save the play. Very, very fortunate for the Cowboys.
So, with all that being said, did Dallas make themselves contenders in the NFC?
At this point, I have to take them seriously. At 3-5, they were dead to me.
Yep.
But it's not just that they've won 5 in a row, but how they've done it. So they've now in the last 2 weeks shown you we can beat one of the best teams in the league by choking them out.
Yes.
And we can get late in the game in a shootout where all of a sudden our defense, they showed you in the fourth quarter they could win a game where their defense plays poorly.
Yes.
Because the defense played great for three quarters. But can we just show real quick what Dak did first three quarters versus the fourth quarter in overtime? Through three quarters, this is one of the worst games he had all season of his career. Three turnovers, a 65 rating. The team had 9 points. And then in the fourth quarter in overtime, 243 yards. He hadn't had three touchdowns in a game all year. He had three touchdowns in the fourth quarter in overtime, a near-perfect passer rating, completing 85% of his passes. He was great, and the offense was great.
The defense match with that running game is always going to be winning football in the NFL. When you can be that physical in the trenches, it's always a good recipe. But what they've done with adding Amari Cooper, they've added great variance to how many different ways they can win. Amari and the other receiving corps, very, very quiet. Dak catches fire. The wide receivers catch fire in the fourth quarter. What I like about the team now is you can be a powerful team. But when you get in the playoffs, man, the playoff games are played fast. And this Dallas offense is as fast as a Dallas offense I've seen in a long time. When you add Michael Gallup on the outside, Amari Cooper with his ability to run slants, catch those and run off, and Amari is an awesome deep threat also. So as they come down the stretch, Dak and Michael Gallup, Dak and Amari Cooper, if they can just time up a few more of those outside throws that Dak has not been great at, this Cowboys team is very, very dangerous. We know they can play that stranglehold of a defense, but you add those big plays, you add those explosive plays, you add the fear that those young wide receivers with their speed on the outside, they can put into that defense. Yes, they are contenders in this year's Super Bowl.
All right, time now for Put a Grade On It, sponsored by CarMax. Dak Prescott had an interesting day, throwing for over 450 yards and 3 touchdowns, but threw 2 picks and had 1 fumble that could have been costly. Nick, put a grade on Dak's night.
I was ready to give Dak an A. I'm going to downgrade it just slightly to an A minus because of something C said before the show, which is, how many yards Dak throw for? And I said 455. And C said, could have been 555 if he, some of those passes to Michael Gallup you're talking about. But over, I mean, the first 3 quarters, he was pacing towards an F. The fourth quarter in overtime, an A plus. I'm going to give him an A minus.
Yeah. He had C work for the first 3 quarters yeah. and everything. So the final, as you guys know, Nick Brainiac, he's always trying to ace. In the final, he aced the final. Mm-hmm. If you look at the overtime, look at the fourth quarter, and ace in the final, that's definitely going to get him a great performance by Dak. Like to see a little bit better. Study for those earlier quizzes. Prep yourself. Don't cram on the final.
I like it. All right, coming up, whose blunder was more costly for the Pats, Bill Belichick's or Tom Brady's? That's next on First Things First.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple. Easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
We'll get to the Patriots-Dolphins game in a second, but first, Juju Smith-Schuster makes an incredible toe-tap catch for a touchdown.
Man, we had a coach, wide receiver coach, he used to put a mat down on the back and say, hey, I want you guys to fall off into this like you're falling off into a pool. But I'm like, no, man, that mat, it's not soft enough. But this is how a guy taught us how to do this, that two-toe-tap, toe-tap swag. Oh, get it. Whew. Man, that's as good. If I had toe tap swag, I would have a picture of him right in the back of the end zone against
Cowboys,
the Raiders.
Amari Eat Cooper that. Makes a circus catch for the game-winning touchdown in overtime to beat the Eagles.
A little fortunate here. This is about a quarter step away from being a pick six the other way. But you know what? Like, the Cowboys deserved a little good luck. And Amari, third touchdown catch of the day. He was a monster. Dak was great in the fourth and overtime.
This was special. Chiefs, Ravens, Patrick Mahomes.
This is wild.
Wait till you see this. He's shown us he can make any throw, but a no-look pass. This kid's incredible.
Watch this angle, see? And they said after the game, he does this in practice regularly.
Yeah. No. Brett Favre used to do this. Aaron Rodgers does it. I had one guy, man, kids out there, you don't know him, great quarterback, first ballot Hall of Famer, Warren Moon. He used to be able to do this. Now, I haven't seen the angle where I see somebody do it in the game. Yeah. That was nasty.
Finally, Baker Mayfield shows off his arm with a 51-yard strike to Jarvis Landry. See, this is the game that you called. You saw it in person.
Man, Baker Mayfield is the real, real deal. He can make any throw on the field, is a dynamic leader. Man, his patience in the pocket, he's not trying to run. He's athletic trying to throw. Man, thoroughly impressed after spending a couple days with the young guy.
I'm always impressed by Baker, but I can't believe he completed this pass. I mean, there were three different Panthers that were in coverage, essentially, at various parts of this play. He had maybe a window the size of two footballs to fit it into, and he fit it in.
Yeah, the probability was like 0.0% of getting in. Something like that. Not real, real high.
Moving on to one of the most improbable endings we have ever seen. The Dolphins scored on a miracle last-second play to beat the Patriots 34-33 in the most un-New England thing ever. They seemed unprepared for what the Dolphins did, including having Rob Gronkowski on the field for defense. Patriots have now lost 5 of 6 in Miami. Here's Kenyon Drake on his last-second touchdown.
I mean, honestly, I'm still sitting before y'all, and I still don't believe it. So I just saw it was Brunk in front of me, and I was just like, look, I got somewhere to be. So I had to get in the end zone, you know what I mean?
Every time we practice it, it's for the Hail Mary, but got to be ready for anything. It's football. And just the way it ended, I mean, it sucked. I mean, never really been a part of anything like that. I feel like it's going to test our character big time. How we bounce back from something like that. And just got to make that tackle.
See, walk us through what happened on that final play.
The thing that, if you were shocked by the play, the only thing more shocking, Rob Gronkowski, he gave it to us. And sometimes these press conferences, you can only lie for so long. Eventually, that's what they say, a lawyer. The reason why they put people on the stand is because eventually they ask you so many questions. Man, it gets your mind tied up. Eventually, you just end up telling part of the truth. Rob Gronkowski said, the only time I've ever heard in being covering this league, a Patriots player said, we had not prepared for that. They had done a Hail Mary. Yeah, where the quarterback, even if he hasn't got a cannon, Aaron Rodgers can throw it from the other side of the 50, but we had never had practiced 70 yards where they might do the hook and ladder and everything. Now, Buddy Ryan, Dennis Green, every team I've ever been on, we always practice the hook and ladder, a defense against that. I couldn't believe that the Patriots, that they hadn't done it. So that was tremendous insight that I had never heard and or seen. Wrong personnel on the field. This started Bill Belichick. Where did he learn this? When Bill Parcells, when he coached for him, they used to put Keyshawn Johnson back to be able to intercept or knock down the Hail Mary.
Yep.
So since that, Belichick had a guy like Randy Moss on the roster. He put him back there. If he had done that, why didn't he put Josh Gordon? Like, I don't know why you got Gronk on the field. Josh Gordon's a better athlete than Gronk. Now, if it's a Hail Mary from the 40, I can understand Gronk because he's so big and everything being in there. But if you have, talking about agility, man, Drake almost broke his leg out there in the open field. And you can see that, man, I had never seen New England like this. I couldn't believe they had a couple players on the ground. Why didn't he get off the ground at the end and try to pursue the play? Yeah. Like, I was shocked that they were able to pull this off. Watch 31 right here. Where does 31 go in there? After he misses that tackle, where is he right now? Yeah, I mean, where is he?
See, there's all of this was shocking. And by the way, credit to the Dolphins for not having some block in the back or something or a forward pass that would have gotten it called back. But this was, go ahead.
Watch this, 31 here. Jonathan Jones, where is he? 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, 1,004, 1,005, 1,006.
Right.
Where is he?
Back in this play.
Like, he should have been up off the ground. Like, they had plenty opportunities. It's a mistake to have a guy like Gronk on the back end. I'm going to tell you where I'd like to be today. Man, drive me to New England. I want to go to the press conference today for Belichick. That's what I would like to do because I know that one's going to be a good one.
And this is also, while this play was amazing and the Dolphins, obviously, it took a near miracle for them to win, this is more of the same of the Patriots being in very closely contested games on the road or just getting blown out on the road because they are yet to play a complete game, offense and defense, on the road. They are coming off their best defensive performance of the season, holding the Vikings to 10 points. And now in this game, Brady was awesome, aside from when he took the sack at the end of the first half. Forgot they didn't have a timeout and cost them 3 points, 3 points that would have been valuable. But you can't put this on the offense. But the defense all of a sudden put him in position to where that you were only up five, to where that play could beat you at the end. There were a lot of unpatriot-like things. This game should have been over. Josh Gordon draws a pass interference penalty with 2 minutes left to put the ball near the goal line. And if you punch it in, the game's over. There are so many chances. I said, okay, the Dolphins, it was a good effort, good effort. You're not even going to cover anymore. The Patriots score a touchdown, game's going to be over. They don't do that. Belichick had an opportunity there to think about going for it on fourth down, knowing if we don't get it, Miami's going to have 15 seconds backed up on their own one. Doesn't do that.
Yeah, don't think he was really concerned about that.
No. And then to put in your Hail Mary personnel when I didn't know what the Dolphins were going to do on this play. Here's what I knew they weren't going to do. A Hail Mary. What are they going to do? A Hail Mary to the 20? Like, there's no possible Hail Mary.
It's one of those things, too, Nick. You say, okay, what does the opposition hope that you do. Yes. Right.
Take my best tackler, Devin McCourty, off the field and put in maybe
their most consistent defensive player the last several years.
And put in a guy who cannot move side to side. Who has a Frankenstein-ish lateral movement. Like, that is the Dolphins. They might as well be playing with 10 guys out there for the Patriots.
So Gronk says this is going to test our character big time. How crushing of a loss is this for the Patriots?
Well, if you look at the Patriots, and they got a great history, but they don't have a great history on the road in the playoffs. And this right here, this won't be the death blow, but if they don't make it to the Super Bowl, it will come back to a game or a moment like this. Man, they are a huge favorite. If they're able to get the one seed, or if they're able to get the two seed and something happens with that one seed in that divisional round, man, the Patriots have had tremendous success in this league. Most of that success is based on being the number one seed and having people come to Gillette twice before they're able to get the Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta. So I believe it's a crushing blow. I believe that, man, Kansas City, no one in the AFC wants to go to Gillette. But imagine them playing in Kansas City, this defense against that Kansas City offense. So I believe will have a huge effect long-term on the Pats and what they do. Now, I'm not alarmed or I'm not overreacting that they struggled in Miami. Like, they've done that. But this was the game that they had to win. The probability of them winning, Nick, was...
Well, after the field goal was over 99%, like, because it was going to take one of those plays. Here's the thing for the Patriots' loss. There's a couple ways to look at it. One way to look at it is, man, they sure got lucky. The Steelers lost and the Texans lost, so they maintained the pole position for the two seed. The flip side is, the one seed's basically now put to bed for them. Like, I think they are still likely going to get that bye. They are, because the Steelers lost, because the Texans lost, they are still in position to get that bye. But they are not in position to have the playoffs go through Gillette. They would need the Chiefs, it would look like, to get upset, or maybe even the Chargers. They're behind the Chargers as well. They're just fortunate the two teams they're behind are in the same division, so only one of them can get the bye. But the Steelers and the Texans did them a favor yesterday by losing. Flip side is, had they won, that. The two seed would be locked up at a minimum, and they would be looking towards potentially catching Kansas City for the one.
Well, speaking of the Steelers, we're going to get to them coming up. Ooh. Are they toast after losing three in a row? That's next on Fred Express.
On and off the field. We was dancing in the streets now.
Amari Cooper had an amazing game for the Cowboys. 10 catches, 217 yards, and 3 touchdowns, including the game winner. CeCe, how impressive has Amari been for the Cowboys?
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Man, Dak Prescott, is he happy. Santa Claus delivered him a gift early, thanks to the Raiders. Now they have an elite wide receiver. They have the best wide receiver, route runner, there's been the Cowboys since Mike Orr. Didn't Jerry Jones say that? Mm-hmm. Man, sometimes when Jerry talks, we need to be listening.
The Dak splits pre-Amari and post-Amari are as jarring as the Cowboys splits record-wise. Cowboys were 2-5 before Amari got there. They're 3-4, pardon me. They're 5-1 with him. Dak's quarterback rating before Amari, 85 on the year. Since Amari, 122 on the year. I mean, he has been the turning point of their season.
Sticking with this game, the Eagles fell to 6-7 with the loss. Philly is now all but eliminated from playoff contention. See, what went so wrong for the Eagles?
A number of injuries, but the inability to understand how hard the NFL is year in and year out. They were last year, offseason, Doug Peterson writing a book. Now tell me, Doug, what have you ever done that deserves for you to write a book? So I thought right from the beginning, and this whole offseason, just talking about New England, oh, it's better here. We have more fun here. Well, how much fun are you going to have when you don't make the playoffs, huh? I believe they'll have a better offseason this year, and they will bounce back next year. Why? Because I believe in the quarterback, and I believe in Howie Roseman and the types of players that they're going to bring into Philadelphia.
But this game was, to me, a microcosm of their entire season. Had a ton of opportunities and couldn't take advantage of them. Had moments where it looked like, oh, this is going to be the turning point of the game of the season, and couldn't take advantage of it, and then don't get the overtime coin toss, and Dallas runs it down your throat. 8.5-minute drive to start
and end
overtime.
If you're a cornerback anywhere in the world right now, send Philadelphia an application, a picture, and your bio.
The Saints clinched the NFC South with a win over the Bucs yesterday. New Orleans struggled throughout the first half but scored 25 unanswered to improve to 11-2. Nick, what did this game tell you about the Saints?
The Saints last few weeks now struggling a little bit. If you didn't watch this game, you might say, oh, they won by 14. Tampa was in firm control of this game. They were up 14-3, force a strip sack on Breeze. Then the Saints don't score the next possession either. Really quality comeback against a Tampa team that looks like they're booking their offseason reservations. But the Saints got to click back into gear, especially with the window opening with the Rams' loss.
Yeah, you got to be careful playing against Tampa Bay. Right here, the Saints, a divisional opponent. They typically play them very, very tough. Only team to defeat them the first game of the season. Tampa Bay's got a good offense. So, listen, this NFL, it's rough, man. The month of late November, December, it's rough. Sometimes it's not about drawing pretty pictures. It's about calculating wins. And that's the way they were able to just do enough just to be able to get it done.
Finally, the Browns beat the Panthers 26-20. Baker Mayfield had 238 yards and a touchdown to lead Cleveland to their fifth win of the year. Carolina has now lost five straight. CeCe, you called this game for Fox. What was your biggest takeaway?
Man, at the end, Cam Newton, if he can make one throw, if he can put a little air on the football, his fundamentals, sometime under duress, sometime they leave him. I think he's too good of a passer in those goal line situations not to be able to come up with one of those throws. Late in the game, his best wide receiver, DJ Moore, he was injured. That's the reason why Curtis Samuel, they're throwing to him. And Curtis Samuel is a running back from Ohio State. He's developing as a wide receiver, but he can't be your go-to guy in the red zone, especially at the goal line, because he's not a jump ball guy. He's a speed guy, all right? That's the way. He's a reverse guy. He has not developed that part to his game yet. So Cam was not very, very sharp at the end, but Baker Mayfield and the type of energy, not only that he's put into this team, you could feel it in the city. Now, it was cold in Cleveland. In the morning, the streets, the vendors out, the atmosphere, the fans talking to them, man, they love their Sundays now because they got hope in Baker Mayfield. And I was just impressed the number of throws that he made, the type of leadership, being around him a couple days. Man, he is a football playing guy. He is a version of Russell Wilson, Brett Favre, and ultimately trying to be like Drew Brees. Very impressed with what they have going on. Someone asked me the question, if I could have one franchise right now be in Green Bay and be the head coach there, or the Cleveland Browns be the head coach there, I'm going to Cleveland.
Wow. Really?
Miles Garrett, that defensive end. Mm-hmm. Ward, the cornerback. Chubb, the running back. Baker Mayfield as the quarterback. You know, man, I like the way they're situated. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, be very, very careful because the Cleveland Browns, they got a serious football team they're going to put on the field the next few years.
Let me address the Panthers first, and then I'll get to Baker. Listen, this is I can nitpick the play calling just like I can nitpick when they went for two against the Lions, not letting Cam get out and move. But in that situation, he had an open receiver. He missed him. I can nitpick on third and fourth and goal, not letting Cam get out and move, not maybe running him or McCaffrey. But he had an open receiver, and he missed him. Last week, he had plenty of open receivers, threw four picks. This is a collapse. This is a full-on collapse. I hope it does not cost Ron Rivera's job, because I think Ron Rivera is an excellent coach. But going from 6-2 to 6-7 with two games left against the Saints, that's the type of thing.
Yeah, and a new owner.
And a new owner, a great point. And that can cost people their jobs. The Panthers they're not eliminated from the playoff picture because that sixth seed's still up for grabs in the NFC. But this is a disastrous this last 5 weeks of football. That Steelers game, they still haven't recovered from that mollywhopping they took at the hand of Pittsburgh. Now to the Browns. It's rare that we can make definitive statements about a draft class or about a draft during that first season, I feel like I can definitively say the Browns got the pick right. I know there were four quarterbacks taken after Baker in the first round, tied the record. No, there is no doubt in my mind, barring some catastrophic injury, that the Browns got the right guy. He is so clearly ahead of everyone else. I watched Darnold. Darnold has moments of brilliance and then long stretches of futility. Rosen doesn't even have the moments of brilliance right now. Mm-hmm. Josh Allen's a better runner than he is passer. And Lamar right now has been the second best of the rookies, and he's barely throwing the ball. Baker's got stretches of brilliance and then moments of futility. Mm-hmm. He is spectacular, see.
Yeah.
I like Baker Mayfield. I liked him before the draft, but I believe he has the type of image and personality that Cleveland needed. They did get it right based on all those things. He really matches up with the culture and the type of team they're trying to put on the field.
All right, we're moving on to a veteran quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, who had to attempt some late game heroics after missing most of the second half with a rib injury, less than 3 minutes to play. Big Ben threads the needle to find Juju Smith-Schuster in the end zone, his second touchdown of the day, but the Raiders would respond. Derek Carr finding Derek Carrier in the end zone puts the Raiders up by three, still life for Pittsburgh, and they connect. And the hook and ladder for 43 yards, getting down into field goal range. But the ensuing field goal, this wasn't pretty. Chris Boswell slips. The kick is blocked. Steelers lose 24-21, their third loss in a row. And here's Big Ben after the game.
We all need to look in the mirror and, figure out what's going on and, starts with each individual needs to look inside first.
What do you think the problem is?
I have no idea. If I knew, we'd have it fixed.
So, see, can the Steelers rebound after their third straight loss?
Yeah, they still can. They're still in the lead in their division. Super Bowl aspirations are with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're one of the few teams every year. That's one of their goals. It's a realistic goal. Other people say it, like to put it on a T-shirt, but they're one of the franchises, them, New England, and just a couple more that can actually have, these are realistic. They do it from the ownership into the front office and into the players. So they're consistent with, of course they can. Ben, he's got to be able to get better. All those, especially, I like the fact that he said, we all have to take a real conscious look at ourselves in the mirror, and it starts with Ben. Typically, he doesn't do that. He typically excludes himself from that. When you're in a tailspin like this, you're trying to put together good series, good quarters, a good half, and they just haven't been able to do it. I know they have good leadership in Mike Tomlin, but, man, you don't go to Oakland late in the season and lose these types of games. So I thought they've been a little fragmented as far as the locker room and some of the thing, their messaging points. I know the L. Bell thing, we haven't talked about it, but that's taxing on a football team because now the backup, who is the starter, now he's out with potentially a high ankle sprain. Don't think he's going to be back for the next two or three games. So their overall talent level this year, they're not as talented. So now you can't overcome things like that, a poor performance in Oakland. They're a less talented football team than they've been the last 4 years.
And this is the second week in a row that they can't take advantage of a golden opportunity, particularly with the New England loss. They host New England next week. You are 2 weeks ago, they're on the road in a very winnable game against Denver. Big Ben throws those red zone picks. Last week, they're at home with a 16-point halftime lead, and they blow it. The first lead of that margin blown at home in Steelers franchise history. And this week, you lose to Oakland. And by the way, this was looking like it was going to be a very typical Steelers game against an inferior opponent on the road. Closer than it should have been.
Right.
Big Ben had some heroics late. And then you let Oakland down four. Not down three, where a field, down four, where only a touchdown can beat you. Drive the length of the field. And you loot, like the Boswell, but they just gave Boswell a $17 million contract this offseason as a kicker, which was questionable at the time. He might not see the end of the first year of that contract. He missed two kicks in this game, slipped in the bad turf in Oakland on the end. But you can't leave it up to your kicker. You're playing the Raiders. You're a double. This is Football Outsiders had this stat. It's remarkable. In the last decade, there have only been 11 losses by road favorites of double digits. Teams that go on the road as double-digit favorites. League-wide, in the last decade, there's only been 11 losses. Pittsburgh got four of them.
Wow.
So, like, this is as good as I believe the Mike Tomlin era has been. And prior to the 3 weeks ago, they'd only lost once in their previous 16 road games. Now they've lost both of their last two road games in demoralizing fashion.
And for those who are going to question Mike Tomlin, let me tell you, as a former NFL player, being in a lot of locker rooms, you know what? A coach, a good coach, gets you ready for the big game. The games against people you're better than, you got to get yourself ready for those games. You can't expect a coach to come fire you up when I'm better than him. What's coach going to tell you? Oh, you're better than him. Well, okay, you're supposed to play better than him. In those games, the coaching is not as important. And the people don't even think about it that way. You got inferior competition. I'm better than you. The Pittsburgh Steelers and their players typically have just not fared well in those situations. And I don't believe it's the coach's fault, because you can see in the games that are highly contested, in those games that are most competitive, in those games that mean the most, you know, you don't be a good coach in those situations and then go backwards in those situations. It's the players. The players drop the ball when they look at in the competition and it seems to be inferior.
And they miss Le'Veon Bell and they missed James Conner yesterday as their backup to Le'Veon Bell. The Steelers this year are 6-0-1 when they have at least 75 yards rushing. Mm-hmm. They're 1-5 when they don't. Yesterday, 19 for 40. And so that Big Ben missed extended stretch, as you mentioned, to start the second half. Their offense totally went to sleep there. Josh Dobbs, who had played well as a backup before, played really poorly. And this is an inexcusable loss. I don't know that they're going to be okay. I know that the next 2 weeks they have New England and New Orleans, and I know you got a bunch of teams at 7-6 chasing them. Forget just for the division. To make the playoffs, the Steelers could go from 7-2-1 to out of the playoffs after three games that they had full control of, that they blew each one of them.
All right, let's get to some elite level play. Coming up, did Patrick Mahomes have his MVP moment yesterday? That's next. First things first. Welcome back. First things first, former NFL head coach Eric Mancini joins us. Coach, it's good to see you.
Good morning. Good to see you. Good to see you.
Welcome back.
Nick has been talking about all your texting last night.
Yeah.
He only texts when he has something he feels good about. Otherwise, it's radio silent.
That's not true.
Oh, my God.
That's just not true at all. Coach is starting to show off with a lie. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you'd do that.
I imagine our Kansas City native was excited last night. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens heading into Arrowhead to take on Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Fourth quarter, Ravens up 7, 4th-and-9. Mahomes heaving one up in desperation. Tyreek Hill catches it, and then four plays later, fourth down again, Mahomes finds Damien Williams, who scores. Game tied at 24, so we head to overtime. Kansas City kicked a field goal. Lamar Jackson gets hit, and he's down. So RG3 had to replace him and can't connect on that fourth down. Chiefs, or here's the fourth down, doesn't connect. Chiefs go on to win this one 27-24. Patrick Mahomes with 377 yards, two touchdowns. Here he is on the win.
These are the best wins. I mean, when you have to battle, I mean, you trade blows with somebody. I mean, that's a great football team, a physical football team, and has a lot of talent. And so when you trade blows with a team like that and you come out with a win in the end, I mean, those are the wins that you remember. Those are the wins that really satisfy you the most.
Coach, what did that win tell you about Mahomes and the Chiefs?
Well, I did think the fourth down play was impressive, and, mm-hmm. and it's good to see him in these situations where he's in tight games and he's got to make plays, and he's been able to do that. I do think that teams, as they look at this tape and they look at even some of the earlier games, are going to see his problems with pressure, and he does have he has an issue with that, and he's going to get a lot more pressure as we move on. And I know the clip didn't show the play in overtime where he's scrambling to his right, coming back to the left, he fumbles the ball. And just by the football gods allowed them to recover that ball, but that should have easily been the Ravens' ball. So there's that element of make something happen, which was incredible on that fourth down play, but he's going to have to, as he continues to go to reel some of those decisions in, and he's going to have to deal with significantly more pressure, I think, as we continue to move deeper into the season.
But these are the types of games that I think impress you more than a 35-10 shellacking, right? Like, these are the games that I've heard you talk about when you speak of Big Ben with such reverence. Like, that 4th-and-9 play, maybe not quite the exact same, wouldn't look the same, but those are the types of plays that I think have made you respect Big Ben so much. Like, the keeping things alive, keeping your eyes downfield, have-to-have-it moment. If you don't make that play, the Chiefs lose. The game will be over, and finds a way to do it. Like, against are either the best or the second best defense in all of football in a game where he was good in the first half and in the second half yesterday until this last drive and overtime was really bad. Had like 28 yards passing, had an interception. Like, so overcoming all of that with a defense that was clearly at times in the second half confusing him. They were throwing a cover zero at him multiple times where they had absolutely nobody back and he couldn't get the ball off in time. Those are the types of things that as you are looking with a, I will say, critical eye for any of these young players that I think you have said you've wanted to see and is the most impressive.
Yeah, that's absolutely what you're looking for, is when things aren't going well, can you find a place to overcome that and overcome it late in the game and find a way to win the game? And you saw that on the 4th-down play, but then you're frustrated with the fact that it's 1st-and-10 in overtime. They're on the 20-yard line. He's trying to make a play, and he puts the ball on the ground. Those are the plays that I think with time and experience, he'll hopefully move past, because with all the good things that he did, if they had lost because of that play, it would have been incredibly frustrating.
And this is still a team that they miss. They're going to miss Kareem Hunt. Like, you miss his dynamic playmaking within the Patty Mahomes. Yes, I was in this league with Brett Favre, so I've seen players like him. But, man, Brett Favre, man, we played against him a lot. And Dennis Green used to always be like, listen, don't let him get behind us, because there are going to be 2 or 3 plays, all right, where we're going to blitz him, and he's going to throw it to us, because he's going to be trying to always make plays. So Coach Mangini and those who have been in this business, yeah, they love to see the spectacular. But how do you manage games? How do you win games? And how do you prevent your team from losing? And that was a critical mistake. They end up being very, very fortunate. And because they were fortunate, we can't gloss over that. We must continue to look at it that was a bad play, that he put the team in a bad position. Now, the ball bounced their way. They end up getting it back. So, yes, there's some very, very positive things. One of the most positive things I saw was late in the game where they get the blitz at the goal line. Instead of him holding on to the ball, he goes right to the back. The back is hot. The back ends up scoring in the flat. So, ultimately, the more he sees these types of looks, he will get better at it. But you can believe the next 3 weeks and in the playoffs, teams are not going to sit back and play cover 3 and just play cover 1. They're going to blitz him, and they're going to do it from a variety of different looks.
What is amazing is that as you watch these games, and it happened with Denver. Denver was doing a good job getting pressure on him both times that they played, but they'd continually let him to get outside the pocket.
And get out to the right.
Yes. I don't – like, that part to me – And I'm sure they covered it. I'm sure they went through it. I'm sure they stressed the importance of it. But he's going to kill you if he gets out of the pocket. And he's going to kill you if he gets out of the pocket to the right. But yet it happens in critical situations. The 4th-down play, as critical as you can get, and he gets out, he extends a play, and we see what happens.
And the reason this win was, you could argue, the best Chiefs win of the year was the context of what you're saying. See, Kareem Hunt's not there. Spencer Ware, the backup, he gets dinged and gets knocked out of the game. Tyreek Hill makes that huge play, but Tyreek Hill was not at 100%. You could see him limping around. He said after the game, my heel's in bad shape. And their center got knocked out of the game in the first quarter. So you do not have all – and Sammy Watkins was inactive for the game. So we've talked a lot throughout the year, I'd like to see a lot of these young quarterbacks with all these weapons. Well, your number one running back, your number two wide receiver are out of the football game. Your number two running back's dinged. Your number one wide receiver's dinged. Your center's out. And you're up against a dominant defense, a defense that has carried this Ravens team to their 7 wins on the year, and they still find a way to win. What the other thing we've seen, and this is, you both of you have been preaching all year, don't get hung up on 54-51, that it's going to change as the weather changes, as the season gets longer. Like, as the season...
Oh, we know something about football.
Right. Okay. Oh. So, like I said at the top of the show, tough kind of compliment. And so we've had just in the last 2 weeks 3 instances of the three best offenses in football going up against, I believe, the three best defenses in football. We saw the Cowboys take on the Saints. Cowboys held the Saints 10 points.
Indoors. Perfect conditions, yep. Basically.
We saw the Rams take on the Bears last night. The Bears held the Rams to 6 points. We saw the Ravens.
Not a lot of wind in Chicago. Not the typically frigid wind. So it wasn't the weather.
Right. No. It was just great. It was defenses choking out the offense. And then we saw Ravens take on the Chiefs, and they did a really good job. And they held them 27 points. And so, like, that to me does speak to the difference between, now the Chiefs defense might ruin it all, but the difference between the Chiefs offense and even the other great offenses in the league. We saw those other two offenses go up against great defenses and look nothing like themselves. The Chiefs were held to 10 below their season average, but not 21 or 28.
I'm not going to do that comparison, because that Bears defense last night, I don't care how much faith you, I don't care where you was raised at, they not going to score 27 on that Bears defense from last night. So trying to move the Rams from a frigid or cold climate from Los Angeles compared, like that was a huge change for guys coming from L.A. now coming there. So I can't make the comparison that Bears defense couldn't get that same result against anyone in the Bears have a talented defense. They have a lot more talent than Baltimore. Have on the defensive side, Coach.
And it's going to be interesting to see as more teams play Mahomes and more things are tried versus him, the book that the defensive coordinators have and figuring out what he does really well, what he does poorly, how you can make him play left hand. And that's what you see a lot deeper into the season is the book is being built.
Yes.
People are drawing on the things that have worked against these offenses and giving them heavy doses on it to see whether or not the offense has another pitch, whether they can play left-handed. And as we go, that's going to be more and more a part of these game plans.
All right, Coach, we're going to have you stick around. Coming up, the Cowboys. Are they contenders after beating the Eagles? That's next on First Things First. Dak Prescott trying to make it 5 wins in a row for Dallas in the fourth quarter, tied at 16. He finds a streaking Amari Cooper for the touchdown. But the Eagles, they would respond. Carson Wentz hitting Nelson Agholor on the deep pass. Beautiful play there. And then Darren Sproles would even up the score with less than 2 minutes to go right here. So we are heading into overtime. Less than 4 minutes left, fourth and one. Zeke barely picks up the first down. And then 3 plays later, the ball is deflected. Cooper grabs it, takes it in the end zone. That was the game winner. Cowboys win their 5th in a row. Dak with over 450 yards. Cooper over 200 yards. And here he is after the game.
I mean, I've been running a lot of slant routes since I got here. I beat these guys on a lot of slant routes when we first played them. That guy knew I was running a slant. So I just stayed with the ball. And thank God.
Thankful for this team we have. This team is coaching staff and be able to just to continue to fight. And when things were up, things were down, a team that never wavered, that never blinked, that never doubted us coming out on top. I'm thankful for that, honestly.
Coach, how impressed were you with the Cowboys in this win?
You know, I want to be more impressed, but I'm not. I just can't get on board yet. And even that last play, he's running a slant. The cornerback has hard inside position. The ball should not have been thrown. It should have probably been picked off, and it bounces up, and they score a touchdown. And look, the football gods played a big role in a lot of games yesterday. The Kansas City game on the fumble. The New England game, that game, you know, there were bounces yesterday that dramatically changed games like this. But to throw the slant on a corner sitting with hard inside leverage easily could have been picked off. And then you had the 3 turnovers early in the game. To have this discrepancy of production and time of possession and the game to come into overtime like it did, I just don't it's just hard for me to jump on board.
Well, so but here's where I will give Dak credit. That play notwithstanding, even if that play is just good fortune, good luck. And see, you talked about that play earlier.
But
that
don't you think it was?
Oh, absolutely. And some of that's on Amari, I think.
I disagree with Coach a little bit because they did have a slant on. Now, it should have been more of a 2-step slant because typically, if you run a 4-step or 5-step slant, you're not going to be able to get it off. So I disagree. he stayed with the route. They probably had to call it and run it on. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what they were going to do, and felt like that hot was built in because he did have a free runner coming on that side, on the left side of the protection. So typically you're going to run one or two steps and get in there right now. Mm-hmm. So I disagree with Coach just a little bit with the hot. But as far as the DB being in perfect shape, have we seen these plays go the other way, which I told you earlier? Man, that's supposed to be going the other way. If Amari, like some wide receivers, doesn't make body contact or goes behind the defensive back, it's going to be going the other way. But I believe the way they played football, as far as defensively and running the ball, it's a component that's still successful in this league. And they match up well against the Saints. They face the Saints. So if they had to go to New Orleans, so for me, I believe they're going to win their division. They're going to be in the playoffs. The team that has the best record, they've already beaten them. So for me, those are legitimate reasons why they're in contention compared to aesthetically what did the game look like. There's all kinds of teams going to struggle in the through three quarters. But good teams will find a way to win. And Dallas, since they've added Amari Cooper, he's really increased their chances and really given their season life.
And, Coach, what was impressive to me is that play notwithstanding is – I didn't think Dallas could win a game like this, where in the fourth quarter, their defense falls apart. That defense was playing great. And then at the end of the third quarter, into the fourth quarter, it fell apart. And Dak played, I thought, in fact, I know, the best stretch of football he's played since the playoff game to Green Bay his rookie year. Like, we can show the numbers, even if you want to put a little asterisk on that last touchdown. Through three quarters, Dak was having a horrid game. There's two interceptions and a lost fumble. And then in the fourth quarter in overtime, I mean, he's completing 85% of his passes at, what is that, 12 yards per attempt. So even if he got fortunate on that last one, he got them back in that football game, kept them in that football game, playing a level I hadn't seen him play since his rookie year. So I do want to give him credit, and I want to give Jason Garrett credit. That fourth and one call is a hard call to make. A field goal doesn't win it for you, but it puts you in good position. You're inside 4 minutes. You have a great defense, but this is their biggest game of the year. This is the game that essentially clinches the division for them. I know you don't like looking ahead, but at this point for Dallas, they would have to go 0-3, and Philly would have to go 3-0. Any other result, Dallas wins the division. So this game clinches the division. He said, you know what? I'm going to put the ball in my best player's hand, Zeke, and see if we can win the game without Philly ever getting the ball back. And then maybe that's why the football gods smiled upon him on that 3rd and 8, because a lot of coaches in that spot see kick a field goal. Mm-hmm. Take the easy points, go up 3, trust your defense inside 4 minutes. They went for it, and then they were rewarded later.
Coach, do you believe that Dallas, that they can be contenders in the NFC?
Or what would you like to see, Coach?
Well, what I'd like to see is when you have a game that's as dominant as Dallas had in terms of time of possession, the numbers were so skewed.
Yes.
And the turnovers were frustrating.
The time of possession was 45 minutes to 22.
Yeah, it's an incredible discrepancy. And usually if you're 34 minutes time of possession, the amount of games that you win is somewhere like 70-80%.
Yeah. And I mean, even before the overtime, it was 38 to 22.
Yeah,
so even if you take out the overtime part of it, it was 38 to 22.
And I know you talk about Dallas's defense collapsing, but you can make the same argument that Philly's defense collapsed and it went both ways. It's just those turnovers. Look, I really do like what they've done with Amari Cooper, the element that Amari Cooper adds to that offense, the fact that now they can run the ball with Zeke and take meaningful shots. And when they get defenses into those 8-man boxes where it's isolated outside, they've got a guy that can actually go downfield and make big plays. To me, that's a huge difference. And the chemistry seems to be there now between those two players. It's just watching this game was frustrating because it looked dominant. And then these turnovers were punctuated throughout the game to where you're just waiting for them to get out of their own way in a lot of ways.
And this is, and the other side of this game is Philadelphia. This was a microcosm of their whole year. Repeated opportunities that maybe they didn't earn, but that were at their doorstep, and they can't take advantage of them. And I know that their secondary is ravaged by injuries. I get it. But when you win a Super Bowl with your backup quarterback, nobody cares about injuries that you have the next year to your corners. Like, you are expected to overcome them, even if that's unfair. Go ahead.
And all our stories last year about Philly was never about their secondary. It was about their defensive line. It was about the rotation that they had with their defensive line and how their defensive line made the secondary better. And then the secondary Murray was never a big part of the narrative. So for this now to be the narrative, yeah.
And the other story about Philly last year was historically good on third down. That's not me being like prisoner of the moment. That's what the numbers said. They're 1 of 9 yesterday on third down. They've been a below-average third-down team all year. This was, I laid out a minute ago how the Cowboys have essentially won the division. If Philly won this game, they would be in the lead in the division thanks to tiebreakers, and they couldn't take advantage.
Yeah, I got to give credit to one person because Philadelphia, it's so much better than New England. There's one guy. Coach Mangini warned us. Watch what happens to Philadelphia. Oh, it's so much better here. Oh, it's fun to play. Oh, yeah. Coach Mangini sat back and said, hey, now, when we struggled in New England, when we struggled, our most was after we first won and trying to figure out what winning does. So, Coach, I got to give you credit. You were way ahead of that. Let's slow down a little bit. And you knew that those talking points that they were taking those shots at New England this offseason, ultimately it's going to hurt you because it's not making you better. How are you concentrating on the team you won that's in the AFC compared to all the other things you need to do necessary to building your football team and building on that first championship that the Eagles had won?
Yeah, Teddy Atlas always says success is like a martini. It relaxes you. And you forget all the things that you need to do to get to that level. And the fact that now everybody's chasing you, so you got to do all those things you did well a little bit better than you did the year before.
Hey, Kettle, let's do this in our dressing room. Let's.
I was going to say, we're going to let Coach go back, have a martini, let you relax for
a little
shake
bit. Shake it up.
Bring it back.
Like some shaking, right?
Two olives, please.
Right.
Two olives.
All right, coming up, how were the Bears able to dominate the Rams offense? That's next on First Things. Thursday Night Football returns this week as Phillip Rivers and the red-hot Chargers face off against Patrick Mahomes and the division-leading Chiefs in a huge AFC West showdown. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video.
That game could decide the one seed in the AFC. That is an enormous Thursday Night Football game.
Get to the Bears and the Rams in a second, but first, the touchdown heard around the world. Dolphins Ryan Tannehill passed to Kenny Stills at midfield. Stills tossed a lateral to Devontae Parker, who lateraled to running back Kenyon Drake. Then Drake was off and running, eluding Patriots defenders
as Gronk
he
fall.
Headed for the win.
See, Kenyon Drake was looking for someone to lateral to before he realized, wait, nobody's going to tackle me, huh?
Yeah, it was. I mean, he had to make a decision right there.
Yep.
I mean, because he didn't want to go out of bounds. You don't want to be the guy in this who gets tackled with the football.
Right.
So immediately, you're looking for where you're going to go next.
Juju Smith-Schuster makes an incredible toe tap.
Man, my wide receiver coach used to put a mat, Sarah, behind the end zone and tell us, hey, I just want you guys to fall on it like you're falling into a swimming pool.
That's amazing.
That's how you learn how to do the toe tap. It's like, hey, coach, man, that thing's still a little hard. Just fall on the mat, son. Yes, sir. No problem. That's how you learn how to do that. Back of the end zone.
That should have been the game-winning touchdown. Instead, the Steelers' defense collapsed.
Chiefs, Ravens, Patrick Mahomes has shown us he can make any throw, but look at this. No look pass. This kid is just insane.
I know our friend Coach Mangini not impressed with the no look pass. I am impressed. See, you've been around this game how long? 30-some years, right?
Yep, longer than you've been alive. I wish you realized that when them takes you have.
How many times have you seen this in a game?
Haven't seen it in the game. Seen it in practices. Seen guys play around with it. But this was amazing. You know that window's there. A little no look. Keep your head down the field for the safety. Keep him in the middle. Throw it in that window, have a guy run into it.
Unreal. So. Finally, Baker Mayfield shows off his arm with a 51-yard strike to Jarvis.
Wasn't better than
Landry.
That throw.
No. See, you called this game. Woo!
55 yards on a rope between the defenders. Cornerback coming off the outside guy. Eric Reed trying to stay with the crossing route. This one of the best throws of the season.
Man, I thought this was good coverage. I didn't think the Panthers made some big mistake here. This was just a spectacular throw by
these are the types of catches you like to make on the defender, because you're right, Nick. It was great coverage. And the DB's like, man, I was there. I was like, yep, you were there just enough to be in the highlight. Eat that.
On to Sunday Night Football, the Bears defense dominated the Rams. They picked off Jared Goff 4 times, sacked him 3 times, and held Todd Gurley to less than 60 total yards. Bears get the 15-6 win to improve to 9-4 on the season. CeCe, what message did the Bears send to the NFL with their 15-6 defensive domination of the Rams?
The Monsters of the Midway, which they had the nickname in the 80s. That's how they won their Super Bowl with the 85 Bears. I played in Chicago a long time. Soldier Field, long time. That's a tough place to play. And now you put that type of defense on the field, spectacular at all three levels. Great defensive front, great rotation of guys that they can put pressure on the quarterback with the minimum. They don't have to blitz.
Right.
Good linebacking core, sideline to sideline. Man, a sure tackling. Corners on the outside, very, very dependable. And playmakers, safeties making plays and not mental lapses where they give up a lot of big plays. This is a dominant defense. That was one of those signature performances that if you're going to play that way, when you face a team like this, this is what you want to be able to do. And, man, don't let the Bears get home field advantage, because that is a place you don't want to go. That is one of the serious home field advantages. And if this team can overcome a young quarterback, if they are able to overcome a young quarterback, man, they are a dangerous, dangerous football team. I love the way that Nagy, the head coach there, called his plays, took some chances, took some risks, and even though his quarterback wasn't playing good, he still put him out there. Man, throw the ball down the field. He kept calling plays to let the quarterback know, I have confidence in you. So he's still in that developmental stage. Impressive win last night.
If you'd have told me that Mitch Trubisky in this game was going to throw for 110 yards and three interceptions and have a passer rating of 33 and be the better quarterback on the field, I wouldn't have believed you, and it would have seemed impossible. That's what happened last night, because this Bears defense is – the Ravens have the number one statistical defense, and they do have an ability to kind of slowly choke you out. The Bears have an ability to seemingly flip the game on every defensive snap. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a quick strike defense, but it feels like that's what Chicago has.
Well, last time they went to the Super Bowl, they created all the turnovers, Peanut, Tillman, Urlacher, and them. They were very, very similar to this, but they didn't have the front seven. They didn't have those bookend rushers, the type of pressure you could put on teams then. So for me, this team is more equipped to do something dynamic than that team that went to the Super Bowl, that Rex Grossman was their quarterback. I believe in their potential and what they can do offensive as far as running the ball and the variance in skill, putting Cohen on the outside, getting him on the edge. I believe they still have the potential to have a special season.
And I was trying to, before the show, think of what recent defenses can I compare this one to, and I said the Broncos defense went to the Super Bowl. But see, you made a great point, which that what that Broncos defense had was a dominant pass rush, most notably Von Miller, and then two lockdown corners. But they had little holes elsewhere. Teams couldn't really exploit them. The middle linebacker, like the safeties were particularly a hole for that Broncos team. That is not the case with the Bears. This Bears team, it feels like, has, of their 11 starters, nine of them are A-minus or better players. And the ability for them to get pressure without blitzing, for Khalil Mack to have another strip sack without having to send six or seven guys, that is, it's really hard to account for. And I knew that a really good defense could slow down the Rams somewhat. I didn't think anybody was holding the Rams 6 points. Like, I didn't think anyone was going to hold the Saints to 10 points the way they did. And to hold the Rams to 6 points and to have Jared Goff look like he was a rookie again, have Jared Goff look confused, skittish, not stepping into his throws, he was rattled from the word go yesterday. A very impressive win for
I don't see a lot of quarterbacks, I don't see a lot of quarterbacks playing in that situation. Yesterday's game, he had a couple hits to the head. They didn't call a couple face masks in the pocket. They collapsed the pocket. Akeem Hicks, man, he's playing tremendous football interior for them. So I don't see a lot of quarterbacks that would have played well in that type of environment that was in Chicago, was spectacular under the national stage and everything. Really, really impressed with the Bears and the way they attack the Rams.
But when it comes to the Bears quarterback, you've mentioned Trubisky and being inconsistent. Do you think that with that defense they could still overcome that type of quarterback play to make a long run in the playoffs?
This is the thing. They're going to have some guys on the outside, Allen Robinson and then the other young receivers, be able to make some plays. Trubisky does have a good arm. So I like the way that Nagy called the plays, that he wasn't afraid even after some mistakes, because he's got a big-time arm. No, he's got an NFL arm, and he's still very, very young. People forget. He only started 1 year at North Carolina. So people talk about Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State. One of the guys they compare him to is Trubisky because he had that one spectacular season there at North Carolina, came into the pros. He's still in that developmental stage. I still believe that the Bears have their franchise quarterback because I believe Nagy will get the best out of him.
And the other thing that's great for Chicago in this specific game and this matchup is they are – it's going to be very hard for them to get to the one or the two line. Like, they are probably – their ceiling is probably the three seed. But if you're the three seed, if you win your first game, you go to one of those two teams that did get a bye. Right now, that'd be the Rams. And they have now in their legit, even though that would be on the road, I didn't think the weather played a huge factor in last night's football game. It wasn't snowing, it wasn't rain, it wasn't super windy. I know it was cold, but I think they now credibly can believe, oh, we can go on the road and not only play with these guys, but beat these guys. I think a lot of teams are intimidated by the Rams' offense. The Bears were not last night and would not be if they played them, even if it was in Los Angeles.
All right, coming up, are the Steelers toast after losing three in a row? That is next on First Things First. To the Steelers and Raiders, Ben Roethlisberger attempting some late-game heroics after missing most of the second half with a rib injury, less than 3 minutes to play, and Big Ben threads the needle to find Juju Smith-Schuster in the end zone, his second touchdown of the day. But the Raiders would respond. Derek Carr finding Derek Carrier in the end zone puts Oakland up three. Still live for Pittsburgh, though. They connect on the hook and lateral for 43 yards, getting down into field goal range. This is where Pittsburgh fans may want to cover your eyes. Chris Boswell slips. The kick is blocked. Steelers lose 24-21, their third loss in a row. And here is Big Ben after the game.
We all need to look in the mirror and, you know, figure out what's going on. And, you know, it starts with each individual needs to look and look inside first.
What do you think the problem is?
I have no idea. If I knew, we'd have it fixed.
CeCe, do you believe that the Steelers can still make the playoffs after dropping to 7-5-1 following their third straight loss?
They have a tough schedule. I believe they're the best team. But the way it's coming out, though, the margin of error has been gone. Do you have more confidence in Baltimore? And they don't have a quarterback, even though they do have a defense. So I would say that's the team I have more faith in. They got a – man, it's tough duty. I mean, it's on the board. They could lose them all here going out. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, they got the best quarterback as far as those teams. So, yeah, I think that they should be in the playoff. The Steelers are a rare organization. Them and New England and a couple others, Denver, when they have a quarterback, but organizational-wise, these are teams every year. Super Bowl, it's they have real aspirations. It's not a T-shirt we're just going to get made up, the kind of fancy little slogan. No, that's what they try to do. And when you start having these types of conversations, teams that are in Super Bowl contention don't go on losing streaks like this because they get it fixed. The one thing I do like about Ben, and it's not typical of him, he's like, every guy need to look at himself. Typically, at this point, he'd be like, ah, you know those plays at the end? Didn't like the way they came in. Ah, you know something? I wish we would have maybe gone to Juju a little bit. Ah, maybe we should have gone to AB. He wasn't doing that. He was like, no, every guy needs to be able to take care of his own business, look at himself, and that's the way it should be. But his leadership hadn't been consistent. And they're not as talented. Regardless, if you don't want to talk about L. Bell, yeah, he's the one who created this situation, but they're not as talented. And at the end of the day, in the beginning of the day, man, this is a business about, it ain't about the scheme, about the X's and O's, it's about the Willies and the Joes. They are not as talented a football team as we're used to seeing, especially offensively.
Well, listen, Pittsburgh right now, can they make the playoffs? Sure. They're a half game up on Baltimore. I think it's absolutely in play they don't, but they're not eliminated. But they're eliminated from being Super Bowl champs. I think they're eliminated from making the Super Bowl, which makes it a wasted season. Like, to your point, there's a lot of teams in the league, see, whose goal every year is to make the playoffs and see what the hell happens.
Right.
I think there's really only two. I think it's really just the Steelers and the Pats who every year, across eras, really, for the Patriots the last 20 years, for the Steelers the last 50, the goal has been to make the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Green Bay, because they've had a unique quarterback situation. Because
yep.
I was searching my brain one. I know there's more
than
that.
You're right.
You look at Green Bay because they've had Brett and because they have Aaron back-to-back. Realistically, we got to start the day with that being our goal.
So that's three, and maybe there's one we're leaving. Three,
New
maybe
Orleans,
four teams.
Drew Brees.
Right.
If they get some defense.
Sure. And this is a wasted year. and a squandered opportunity because guess what? Whether people want to acknowledge it or not, this is a down year for New England. New England is not a juggernaut this year. Mm-hmm. Now, they're still probably going to get the 2 seed because Pittsburgh's falling all over itself, might not make the playoffs, but they were 7-2-1. And if they could have looked in their crystal ball, they would have found out, oh, by week 13, New England going to have 4 losses and still have to come to mm-hmm. our building. And they have, even though they keep giving away the opportunity for that New England game to be a meaningful one, mm-hmm. now it's not going to determine any seeding. It's determining whether or not Pittsburgh is in position to make the playoffs. They clearly missed Le'Veon Bell. Yesterday they missed James Conner. They missed their defense when Big Ben saves them after being injured. He comes back in driving down the field. You can't stop the Raiders. You can't stop the Oakland Raiders. Boswell has had a bad year. He might get cut today. Like, he missed up his footing on that terrible field. That happens. I almost never blame things on the kickers because you can't leave it up to the kickers. You're playing the Raiders. You're a double-digit favorite.
Wait, you ain't going to blame it on the kicker? You think the field just got slippery?
No. I think, of course, it's Boswell.
Part of your job is to get your plant foot right.
Of course.
I mean, he ain't been sitting over there doing nothing all day. They paying them millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Plant your foot and be able to kick it. That field is always yucky like that. Why? Because it's about sea level. They're close to the water. The base is more of a sandy base. It's not a grass base. You go to San Francisco, all the fields are like that. The 49ers are like that. The Raiders are like that. Don't tell me that. It is the kicker's fault. That's all. They didn't block it. He kicked it into the butt of the offensive line.
Okay. All right. I might have brought up a little PTSD.
Yeah, don't you try to defend kickers. Your law firm don't represent no kickers.
No, we definitely don't. We used to represent Marquette King, but he's out now. The point that I'm making is, yes, of course, but when you leave it up to the kicker,
yes.
You leave yourself a chance to have this happen. Mm-hmm. And so they had opportunities to win a game against the Raiders, and they couldn't. They deserve to potentially miss the playoffs if they play like that.
Kicker complained about footing. That's like my statistician to blame that the press box was chilly.
We're done talking about kickers. Moving on to Amari Cooper's huge day. 10 catches, 217 yards, and 3 touchdowns, including the game winner. He has 6 touchdowns and over 600 yards in his 6 games since being traded to the Cowboys. And here he is last night.
I mean, I've been running a lot of slant routes since I got here. I beat these guys on a lot of slant routes when we first played them. That guy knew I was running a slant. So I just stayed with the ball. And thank God. Thank God.
Well, the Cowboys are thanking you. Of course, 3 touchdowns today. But Jason Garrett telling us, ever since you were brought to this team, you've brought a confidence. You've brought a juice. What has it been like for you joining the Cowboys?
It's been a dream come true. When I was young and I thought about playing in the NFL, this is the experience. This is really the experience. Everything from the city, the facility, and just coming out here playing, winning, playing with passion. It's exciting,
yeah.
You know? So it's been a dream come true.
CeCe, how impressive was Amari Cooper last night?
Oh, very impressive. Very impressive. To me, as a kid, you know, seeing people reach their potential or be striving for that's what I saw, because I've been knowing him since he was 17, end up coaching him at a summer camp. He ended up going to Alabama. Why Alabama? Because it was the toughest. He felt like, this is where I need to go. I want to be in the NFL one day. He has NFL aspirations. I'm going to do the toughest. I'm not going to go University of Miami, right up the street from him. All his buddies were going there. University of Florida, being able to play in the SEC. Man, all the opportunity. Florida State, man. Oh, man, they had it going then. So he made that tough decision. He's a tough-minded kid, but he's the type of kid that he needs confidence. He doesn't need coddled. But he needs to know you believe in him. It's like a jump shot, even though you're missing. You got to be able to tell him, man, I need you to shoot your shot. And that's what he got with Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett. And they did a critical thing before they traded for him. They called Nick Saban. Said, what kind of kid is this? What kind of coaching? How does this kid respond? And Nick Saban wrote them a prescription. This is who Amari Cooper is. And Nick Saban gave them the recipe for them to be successful, how you need to be able to utilize him, what he likes to do, his personality. And he is thriving under Dallas in 6 games. I think it's just amazing. It's hard to go from one franchise. Well, the terminology and how different it is and where you're going to live and the pressure of being traded for a first-round pick and to be able to overcome that, I'm really impressed with Amari. And this is just the beginning. I believe Amari Cooper is going to be a Pro Bowl receiver for the Dallas Cowboys for a long time.
I mean, to your point about the transition, we have real testable examples. Look, Golden Tate, his stops and starts in Philly.
Yes.
Not totally getting
and
on the
And he had
page.
Been with a couple different teams and been in several different offenses. So Golden Tate, you would think, would be a quicker adjustment than Amari.
Demaryius Thomas, who had only been in the one with the one team, a couple different offensive systems there. But Demaryius Thomas has had some really good moments with the Texans and also some games where it looks like not on the same page. It took Amari Cooper a half. That first half against Tennessee.
Yep.
And really, since then, I mean, look at what he's done this year in Dallas. Played six games with the Cowboys. Played six with the Raiders. I mean, six touchdowns to one. More than doubled his receiving yards per game. Nearly doubled his receptions. He's back to being the best version of himself. That's a better pace than the pace he was on when he made those two Pro Bowls.
Yes.
And so, like, this is something, of course, an indictment on Derek Carr, Gruden, and the Raiders situation. But throw that aside for a moment. He has remade this Cowboys team because he has made Coach Mangini, when he's out here, talks about quarterbacks being force multipliers.
Mm-hmm.
He's being that as a receiver. He has made Zeke better. Zeke, since he's gotten there over during this winning streak, Zeke's giving you 116 on the ground a game instead of 85. Dak, before him, was an 87 passer rating on the year. Since him, a 105 passer rating on the year. Like, he has made Michael Gallup better because now Gallup's not supposed to be a number one when he ain't no number one.
Yes.
He has made everyone better. And I knew a star wide receiver could do this. I didn't know he was a star wide receiver. Because of your relationship with him, because of how long you've known him, you were the only person, seemingly, with any platform whatsoever, that when the Cowboys traded first-round pick, you said, that's a good trade. This is the only way you're going to find out about Dak. This is what this offense needed. I thought it was, man, this is desperation. That pick, if your season's going the way it is, might be a top eight pick. Like, what are you doing? Now that pick's going to be somewhere in the late 20s, and Amari has absolutely remade the Cowboys offense.
Well, part of yours, Nick, because you got a guy mentoring you, a guy named Colin Cowherd, and you listen to him, and, man, you guys talk football. You guys talk some nerdy stuff, but he put this thing in your head that he's got this. What are wide receivers? What did he say?
Once upon a time, he said wide receivers are icing, not the cake. He has since retracted that comment.
Okay, well, you tell me some fool that's eating cake with no icing on it. Just let me know that, Colin Cowherd. I know you're sitting somewhere right now talking to yourself and answering,
that is true.
Asking questions.
He's driving into work right now talking to himself.
That's true. Wide receivers are more than just icing. You know what they are? When you got a big offensive line, you spent all them first-round picks, and when you have a running back who is dominant, when you have a quarterback who's questionable, can he get in the game? Can we win a game if he throws the ball more than 30 times? The wide receiver is the answer to all those questions. How do you help out a young quarterback? Man, you get him a playmaker on the outside. How do you help out an offensive line? They got eight guys in the box. You get him a playmaker outside. How do you prevent from running Zeke into the ground and not getting those beneficiary to move those chains? You get a wide receiver outside. You move the ball in the NFL, you might be able to move it running, but you score points in the NFL through the passing game. I believe not only they changed the arc of this season, but they changed the arc of Dak Prescott's career when you add Amari Cooper. Now, they get another tight end this offseason to be able to go with Michael Gallup because they're not a big, prodding, just physical team now. They got elite speed on the outside in Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper, and their playmaking ability is back.
See, the icing is the best part of the cake. You know that, right? Coming up, was Bill Belichick to blame for the Dolphins' miracle play? That is next on First Things
First. Add someone that vanilla ice cream.
Twin brothers defend their titles in a huge night of championship fights. PBC, December 22nd, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
These are two great young men that I know from my time in Houston who are both champions of the world. This should be awesome. If you haven't watched the Charlo
Brothers.
Did
y'all go to a bar together or something?
I trained very briefly at the same.
I doubt it.
Plex Gym in Houston.
No, I doubt you being there. Show me a video or a picture.
Second workout
with
I threw
Coach
up.
Coach Mangini, one of the most improbable endings we have ever seen. The Dolphins scored on a miracle last second play to beat the Patriots 34-33. And in the most un-New England thing ever, they seemed unprepared for what the Dolphins did, including having Rob Gronkowski on the field for defense. Patriots have now lost 5 of 6 in Miami. And here's Kenyon Drake on his last second touchdown.
I mean, honestly, I'm still sitting before y'all, and I still don't believe it. So I just saw it was Brunk in front of me, and I was just like, look, I got somewhere to be. So I had to get in the end zone, you know what I mean?
Every time we practice it, it's for the Hail Mary, but got to be ready for anything. It's football. And just the way it ended, I mean, it sucked. I mean, never really been a part of anything like that. I feel like it's going to test our character big time. How we bounce back from something like that. And just got to make that tackle.
Coach, it was fun to watch. What happened on that final play?
Yeah, well, first of all, the idea that they haven't prepared for that situation, that's not true. That's okay. So far from the truth. So I remember 1996 when Bill was working for the Patriots.
Yes, sir.
When he was working for the Patriots?
So he was working for the Patriots. He had gotten let go by Cleveland. He spent the year in New England. And that year they gave up three jump balls. And he was not going to be in a situation where they gave up three jump balls again and two against the Jaguars in the same game, one at the end of the half, one at the end of the game. So we work those situations all the time. We worked them during training camp, OTAs. You cover them during the week. Now, when you look at that play, the first tackle is missed. Okay, so the first tackle's missed right here, and then the rookie cornerback comes up to try to close that space instead of maintaining leverage on the outside guy, which now creates an avenue along the sideline. Kenyon Drake's not coming out of the backfield quickly. He's kind of a second.
Yes.
He's the third option, but you can see he releases really slowly. The idea of having Gronk out there is you don't know if they're going to throw it up and try to have a jump ball type situation, or if they're going to do this. And you've got to have the personnel on the field to do both.
All right, so a couple quick questions. One is, you were saying that you guys drilled and Bill drilled jump balls. But did they drill? I thought Gronk was saying we didn't practice the lateral play, this thing. Do you buy that?
Look, Gronk may not have been in for that play because you don't assume that the ball's going to be 70 yards down the field and Gronk's going to have to make the tackle. He's in for a specific purpose. Now, that doesn't mean that the other team has to do what you want them to do, but you've got to be prepared for the hook and lateral, or you've got to be prepared for the jump ball, and they have the right to run either play.
But why is Gronk in there when you're 75 yards from the end zone and Ryan Tannehill's the opponent? They can't run the jump ball. They can. They'll get it to the 20. Like, if Gronk's in there to knock it down, but they can't run the Hail Mary play.
But sometimes people will throw the ball up, and the idea is you tip the ball up to someone who then off the tip is going to run it.
That's a good point.
You know, so it's not
always.
Because
they can tap it back in the field of play, so you don't have to be in a goal line situation.
Right, you don't have to be. So when you set up a jump ball situation, you have a jumper. Gronk is the jumper. He's the only one that jumps. And then you have a deep tip player and a shallow tip player. So if the offense is trying to bat the ball back or forward, you have players in those positions. So that's the jump ball component. And then on this component, you can see the guys who are on the backside of the play, slow playing. It looks like they're not hustling. That's because you've got to keep everybody, you've got to keep all 11 Dolphins inside of you. Okay, because what you'll do is on this hook and lateral, the alternative there is to throw it across the field. And there's one offensive, I wish we had the all 22 of this. There is one guy who's missing from the screen, which I would imagine is setting up on the backside for
to throw it all the way across.
My biggest problem, and I love your explanation of it, even though Gronk might have not been there, it was a good answer. And the hardcore examples from dating back to when this happened multiple times within a season. My biggest problem is with Jonathan Jones, number 31. He's the one that misses the first tackle.
First tackle.
And you can see, I don't know what his responsibility, it was not to lay on the ground. I've always seen coaches say, man, you're going to lay on the ground, buy a ticket. You might as well be in the stands. But you can watch this, coach, and I want you to get a count on this.
One,
two, three, four, five. Where is he? He ain't no outside protector. He right. should have been off the ground. He was following the ball. He knew where the ball carrier was going to be. The probability of him being able to tackle the guy is as high. But he laid on the ground. That's not the type of effort that I have seen coming from New England. So that was my biggest problem with him and the amount of he was on the ground. Where did he go?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that could have worked a lot harder. And even look at J.C. Jackson. He comes and he closes after the missed tackle happens, which allows the outlet, which allows the pitch. That's a problem, too. They're going to go over this plenty of times. But the bigger problem this game to me was what happened at the end of the half. the fact that they didn't score the points at the end of the half and Tom Brady takes a sack on the 5-yard line.
And said that he didn't know that they didn't have a timeout.
Yeah, that this play right here is more shocking than the 70-yarder. The 70-yarder, that's an aberration. That's never happened in the Super Bowl era. It's probably never going to happen, you know, or it won't probably happen for another 10, 15 years.
Won't happen
whatever
to Belichick.
It is. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine if it's ever going to happen again to them. But this play is so uncharacteristic of the Patriots and much more, to me, what we should be talking about than the last
and
play.
So let me, because this is one thing, and I know you hate when this happens, but when you and I see things the exact same way, that this is, to me, was it more inexcusable in this regard. It is mental errors bother me more than physical errors. To me, there are a lot of physical errors on that hook and lateral, a lot of luck. The Dolphins said there was only one pitch scripted. The pitch to Kenyon Drake.
That's you can tell. That's the only
was
scripted.
They did impromptu.
No, they were supposed to pitch it to Devontae Parker.
And he was supposed to keep it. And they said afterwards that Kenyon Drake, the pitch to him, was on the fly and it worked out great. But that play you see there is a play we see once every couple of Sundays by bad quarterbacks, which is not understanding you can do anything in that spot except for take a sack. You can throw it out of bounds. You can throw it incomplete. You can do anything you want there except take a sack because the play starts with 14 seconds. You have no timeouts. You take that is 3 points off the board for New England.
I never thought that would happen. And if anything, I thought, okay, they're going to score a touchdown here because they just blocked the punt. Yeah, so they blocked the punt. They're going to get a touchdown. There's going to be a dramatic swing in this game. But then for Tom not to realize that they didn't have a timeout, again, that is so much more uncharacteristic than what happened in the last
Coach,
play.
Coach, I thought you had a great explanation, especially for the Hail Mary. My issue with that was not that they have Gronk in the game as much. I just thought that with Gronk as injured as he has been, all right, he wouldn't have been the guy that I would have chose. I would have chose Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon would be my jump guy, and he's more athletic. And I know the Bills, Parcells, Belichick, they got this from Keyshawn, and I know having Gronk out there, but Josh is
being a little generous. I don't think they got it from Keyshawn.
They used Keyshawn in this role.
Whoever want to take credit, they lost the damn game yesterday because they didn't have a better athlete. Gronk in open space, he out there running with a peg leg. I mean, I see why Drake had somewhere to go. So, unfortunate, I haven't seen the Pats lose a game, you know, the Patriot way. That's what I was shocked about. When Stink and I saw this result, we were like, okay, how did they lose? Oh, they lost in a unpatriot-like way. That's the part I know is hard this morning.
Yeah, the last play was unbelievable, and then the play before the half to me was unbelievable, and both those combined in the same day. And look, there's always been problems in Miami. And I remember even early on we struggled in Miami. We struggled to get the win there, and it seems to carry over.
The only thing not shocking about yesterday was the Patriots once again looking very mediocre on the road. 3-4 on the road this year. All of those losses to average to below average teams. This is their first close loss on the road, but they're yet to have a dominant performance on the road. Now, because of the other losses, Steelers and Texans, they might not have to go on the road until the AFC Championship.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.